Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Tensions between Chicago Public Schools and the teachers' union are hot, and yet both sides say, at long last, a contract is close.
We're ready to settle. We've given everything to them. We've put everything on the table.
Keeping at bay a controversial budget vote that could have been embarrassing for the mayor.
Extremely close to settling the teachers' union contract. So as a result, the budget amendment and related items have been withdrawn from today's agenda.
This as President Donald Trump moves to dismantle the U.S. Department of Education, saying schools are failing to educate American children.
Not even the very simplest of mathematics. I said, give me your definition of basic, and they're talking about like adding a few numbers together.
The president doesn't care about the future of the country because the president is not investing. Indeed, the president is divesting from the young people of this country.
Illinois' governor goes on tour to likewise lambast the president and says if Trump goes forward with his plans, the state stands to lose big.
What we're talking about across the board, health care, education cuts, et cetera, that we don't have what right now looks like about $11 billion that we will lose.
Meanwhile, local town halls are becoming testy.
If you cannot behave respectably, then leave.
Plus, Chicago area transit agencies threaten major cuts if the state doesn't come through with a fiscal rescue. The Sun-Times loses journalists and sing it for the La La lineup.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Brandon Pope from WCIU-TV, Alice Yin from the Chicago Tribune, Rick Pearson, also from the Trib, and our very own Nick Blumberg of WTTW News. Now let's get right to it. Brandon, I'm going to start with you. Now, thousands of jobs are at stake, and then also, and this is of no small consequence now that that Kennedy construction has restarted and is wreaking havoc on my commuting life. Transit agencies say doomsday is approaching, and one out of five commuters are going to lose access to their routes unless the legislature comes up with $1.5 billion. What are the other consequences at stake here?
The consequences at stake here is this is a city that's built off of having a great public transportation ecosystem. And so without that, if you cut that significantly, you're cutting into people's livelihoods, how they get to work and how they get home. And then you're cutting into the economy itself, people coming into the city and out of the city. It's not just CTA. We're talking Metro and Pace as well. These are big impacts. And this is really, you could call it a scare tactic, you know, to try to wake up lawmakers. Hey, you're not paying enough attention to this right now. Here's what could happen if. And as we also know, the Trump administration recently put forward a threat to cities like New York and Chicago about if we don't improve security on our trains, that federal funding could also be removed as well. So these are dire times right now for public transportation.
And Nick, it wasn't until the very end, actually, of this lengthy notice of what could happen, you know, no weekend service and Pace, I believe, for example, that the transit agency said, by the way, here's what we'll do in exchange for that $1.5 billion in their transformation plan. Are they missing the point with lawmakers?
Well, I think lawmakers want to see governance reform before they come up with any more money. They've been very clear about that. Now, what form that takes, you know, there are a lot of questions. We've been talking for months and months now. Do we merge all these systems into one? Do we give the RTA more, you know, power to coordinate? And I think, you know, the RTA at least has been saying, listen, we're open to these reforms. They came up with about $100 million in savings from, you know, efficiencies and a modest fare increase. But I think they are very concerned that if they don't try to wake these lawmakers up about this $770 million budget gap, and yeah, on top of that, looking for a total of $1.5 billion to try to revitalize the system, that they're saying, you know, this is going to decimate the region. You know, to Brandon's point about the economics, they say every dollar into transit is $4 in, you know, a boost to the economy.
Now, Rick, you know the legislature. They are nothing if not last minute. So the transit agencies say that these...
You need a crisis.
You need a crisis. This
is what motivates them.
They say that it's going to come at the end of session. So that would mean June these cuts would take effect. But I've been hearing from lawmakers that they're not really going to tackle this until veto session. So is there a timing misalignment or why the warning now?
Well, one, I mean, I agree that this is your doomsday scare the heck out of everybody kind of thing. And to try to ramp up pressure on public pressure on the, on the General Assembly. Yeah. But as you and I have seen many times, the General Assembly will operate under its own time frame. They'll do something. Mm-hmm. They'll do something. And it's not going to be a billion.
It's not going to be a big something. We'll
at some point.
But they will do something. They will do enough to alleviate the immediate crisis. But part of those issues are going to be, you know, the idea of how do you reform the system, which, let's face it, it's a turf war.
Mm-hmm.
It's
Absolutely.
A turf war about the city and the suburbs and who gets how many seats on various boards to run everything.
Who gets to make the appointments.
And who's going to steal the money. You know, the suburbs are going to get all the city money. The city's going to get too much money. Mm-hmm. I mean, these have been going on for decades. So, you know, there will be some serious negotiations going on.
Well,
but I do not expect that this is going to be end of session.
Alice, I want to go over to you for some drama elsewhere, and this is at City Hall, where you had Mayor Brandon Johnson call a meeting with CPS leaders and Chicago teachers, union leaders. This is they're trying, of course, to finalize a contract. Why did the mayor intervene here? And given what is widely perceived to be his allegiance to the CTU, was he seen as a fair broker? How'd that end? Tell us the drama. Dish.
Yeah, no. So we're told that the board president he appointed, Sean Hardin, requested this meeting with them, Stacey Davis Gates and Pedro Martinez. Sean Hardin and Mayor Johnson told reporters afterwards that, you know, they felt it was a productive meeting and that they are getting close to a contract. But we kind of heard a different tone from both Pedro and Stacey, who said that it got contentious and they felt, you know, feelings were hurt and there was disrespect going around. So all to say is both parties do seem to agree that they're getting closer to settling the remaining issues of the contract, but there is a big elephant in the room, which is how they're going to fund that contract.
And still no answers to that, because, of course, we did have a meeting this week of the Board of Education, but they ended up delaying a vote because the contract is now so close to a deal. What's going on there?
Well, reading between the lines, it seems that a dodge of you don't call a vote unless you know you have the votes, is
the
what
votes
really happened.
The votes were,
it was going to be an embarrassment.
Yes. Right. The votes were not there.
But there is a time crunch here, because right now the $175 million pension payment is still on the city side, and they need to be reimbursed for it by the end of this month, or else they're closing out 2024 with a deficit. So
I have to imagine some of the frustration that you see with Pedro Martinez and Stacey Davis Gates maybe is because they're so close, because they want to get this over the finish line. This has been going on for close to a year now. You know, certainly the mayor and the school board president have been engaged in this process, but they're not the ones taking heat day in, day out. So I think that frustration.
There's no love lost between the two periods.
Absolutely
right,
not.
And nobody wants a strike, because ultimately a strike doesn't benefit anybody. It doesn't benefit the mayor politically, doesn't benefit the CTU politically, doesn't benefit students and teachers and parents at all. And so they want to get this done. And the issues that seem to be the sticking point from what I'm hearing in the reporting is things like how much prep time teachers get.
So 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Well,
small increase.
How much are you going to fight over that? And on one hand, that's time that adds up over the course of a year. On the other, I don't know, 5-10 minutes and the scope of a work day, that flies by without even noticing.
And you can understand why a teacher would want extra 20 minutes to grade papers and, you know,
there's a lot of work.
Parents, there's a lot of work involved, right?
But I think when you look at both the mayor and the CTU, who are the two most politically vulnerable groups in this, who do not have a whole lot of public support, either one right now.
Mm-hmm. How far do you take it strike over 5-10 minutes?
So you're going to throw a strike?
I don't think that works for either of them. It really doesn't.
You know,
there's an election coming up in May for Stacey Davis Gates from CTU.
Right.
Oh, she's for sure eyeing that. We're going to get to more politics in just a bit, but first I want to talk about how all of this is in the context, of course, of President Trump dismantling the Department of Education and a warning from Governor Pritzker that that could mean $3 billion in a hit to Illinois in education alone. So how much is just this fiscal landscape part of these negotiations?
I will say that Trump said that the money will still flow. Now, that's Trump saying it. So take it for what
it's worth. There's a question about who's going to be distributing it if all the workers are gone.
Right. I mean, that it's going to be distributed out to different
other agencies.
But again,
which themselves have lost a lot of workers.
And continue to lose workers. So, I mean, like for student loans on the higher education side, those are now supposed to go to, I believe, Small Business Administration, which, of course, is losing tens of thousands of workers. So
having offices closed here in Chicago.
Right. So, I mean, there is a potential of, I mean, we see how chaotic everything has been since day one of this administration, including funding portals that are shut off at, with no reason. Who knows what's going to happen here? But, you know, as the governor said in that clip, the bottom line is when you're talking about $11 billion in kind of a catch-all number, there is no way. I mean,
Illinois' budget's around $55 billion. You're talking about the budget. And then, 11 is a huge.
And oh, by the way, let's throw in the transit cliff.
Right, right. So,
another 1.5.
Rounding error.
All right. So speaking of departments closing, that one of the Department of Education civil rights offices closed here in Chicago, and yet we do have the civil rights office of the Department of Education now taking an investigation into Chicago Public Schools, the Illinois State Board of Education, as well as a Deerfield school district. Nick, what can you tell us about this investigation? It comes on the heels of a couple of conservative groups filing a lawsuit.
That's right. Well, and most prominently, we also saw, a Deerfield parent file a complaint with the Department of Education saying that her daughter was forced, in a gym class locker room to change in the presence of a, quote, biological male. The Deerfield School District has made very clear that no student is forced to change publicly anywhere. There are multiple options for changing privately. So this does appear to be a part of sort of this, culture of people challenging trans folks in public spaces that we have seen over the last few years. And that does follow on, these executive orders that we've seen from the Trump administration.
Alice, any word from CPS? This was a Deerfield school district. So why are Chicago public schools involved?
I feel like in general, though, White House has been kind of cracking down on liberal cities, liberal leaders like Chicago. And they, also launched an anti-Semitism task force investigation into Chicago as well. So I guess that's where that's from. But I will say the Deerfield situation, I think it is also playing out under a backdrop of this really fascinating, intra-party dispute among Democrats, where we have Rahm Emanuel, Gavin Newsom siding on one side of it, and then Lori Lightfoot and other progressive or pro-LGBT voices coming out on the other. And I feel like that's just going to continue to play out in the national conversation.
And Governor J.B. Pritzker inserting himself very much into that conversation. I read an article from The Telegraph, so a United Kingdom-based publication, and he was the lead, Pritzker, in the prospects of his running in 2028. So how does he fit into that picture of Democrats who want to be in there and are navigating this inter-party squabble?
Well, I think if you look at some of his most recent public appearances, you're talking about the Center for American Progress, which is certainly on the progressive side of the scale. Rahm Emanuel, for example, has always been more of a left-center type. I mean, he's the one who told Obama that going for Obamacare was maybe too big.
They had a fight over that. Yeah.
So, you've got different styles here.
And Emanuel recently also saying that the Democrats need to focus less on bathrooms and more on the classroom.
Right, exactly.
Even though he passed a bathroom.
Yeah. Right.
Well, he also talked about classrooms and policing, and what were two issues that he caught a lot of grief over while he was mayor. So, but back to your question.
All good. Let's combo flow.
Well, there is the prospect that Rahm Emanuel is certainly looking at running for president. J.B. Pritzker, obviously, with the steps that he's taken to increase his footprint, certainly has some kind of presidential ambitions. The question is kind of, is your presidential ambition something that's helped by being a three-term governor?
What's a whole? You could do a whole March
entering
Madness.
Entering into a budget.
You could do a whole March Madness bracket right now of all the people trying to jockey for position to be the leader of the Democratic
Party.
Do
that. I missed the deadline for March Madness bracket. I can get in on this one.
I actually believe
more my
CNN
anyway.
Did one yet last
did
night.
Did they really?
Oh, yes. I believe it. Yes.
Was Pritzker a one seed? Was he a two seed?
Certainly with the money he's
thanks
got.
Thanks for research. Yeah,
no. But, seeing him at that Center for American Progress event, it almost seemed like he was testing out some of the lines he might use on the stump, these sort of Elon Musk's minions and meme lords and, all the,
And as well as trying to find that message, which you have this listless leadership in a Democratic Party that, is absolutely divided over.
And they came to a consensus on why they lost in November. There's a lot of different theories on what
there's
happened.
There's no solid answer that anyone's got, really.
And one wants to say it was because of them, so there's that.
Always. Speaking of, we have Cook County Board President Toni Prenquigle saying that she is going to run again.
She is 78, by the way, the same age as President Trump, but not that far out from what Biden was when he was deemed too old to run for another office. Is it a surprise? Any serious competition? Age going to be an issue?
Well, I think maybe her competitors might try to make it an issue, but I think for folks who pay attention to President Preckwinkle, she seems
sharp.
She is sharp. She is energetic. She is her same no-nonsense self that I think folks have come to know for
what
many years.
What competitors?
To put it mildly.
The one-word answers.
Yes, exactly. Yes. But,
any competitors expected?
I can't really foresee any in a serious vein here, but I will say, here again, you know, running for another term in this atmosphere of the Trumpian economics, where what's the biggest thing that the county has to deal with is healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this really could create some uncharted waters for somebody to lead through.
Running again for that very reason.
Right.
Alice, you were going to add in, but I'm going to add a question to throw at you so you can double take there. You also have been reporting about Mayor Johnson perhaps looking ahead to his prospects politically down the road and making some really concerted effort to reach out to the Black community. Why? Is that a sign of trouble for him, do you think? Or what's going on?
Well, I guess I will first say we have 2 years out until 2027. That's a lifetime in politics, so who knows what's going to happen. But we are seeing some, you know, early signs of maybe trouble and, like, maybe a repeat of what we saw Lori Lightfoot do when she shifted her strategy, where, you know, both of them, they got into the runoff mainly with the support of, you know, North Lakefront Liberals and Milwaukee Avenue Progressives. And then they later pivoted to the Black vote. They obviously got it during both of the runoffs. And, you know, I feel like some of the conventional wisdom in local politics is that the progressive base is a bit more of a fickle voter base. They have certainly expressed a lot of discontent over the past couple years. And now we see the mayor, you know, really trying to spend more time outreaching to the Black community, going to the churches and stuff like
that. Which I'm kind of surprised at, only because throughout his mayoralship, he has talked about how he is trying to right the wrongs mm-hmm. that have affected the Black community. Mm-hmm. So if you're at this stage of the game right now and you've got to go back to that base that you've been appealing to this whole time, so it portends very serious political problems.
I think some of it comes down to messaging. I mean, ultimately, he's got things he could run on. Violence is down. He's got the One Fair Wage program. Like, there's things he can message right, but when you see him in press conferences, when he's
trying to explain these things,
what's he talking about? He's dancing around things, and it comes off as too professorial sometimes. And I don't think that connects all the way with Black voters here in the Chicago area. Is there someone out there that could capture that and be a threat there? Aside from Willie Wilson, I don't really see that happening right now, but that's definitely a base he has to get because, as you mentioned, progressives, they're kind of souring on him at this point. And so he can't lock into them for support at this point.
Well, and this comes as we have a lot of voters very activated, perhaps sometimes angry. Rick, you have been reporting on disruption at a town hall. I've read about that in some GOP town halls. This was for Democratic Congressman Sean Casten in the suburbs.
Yes, out in Downers Grove. And ostensibly, this was supposed to be kind of a gathering to do an anti-Trump Democratic rally kind of thing. But what you had here is, rather than talking about Trump, it was the issue of U.S. Support, military aid to Israel in the Israelis' war against Hamas and the deaths in Gaza. And this was something that you see these pop up occasionally, and we saw it during the Democratic Convention, too, among Democrats. And that's also one of the issues among, you know, how do Democrats reconcile that, and is there U.S. complicity, you know, in those deaths? Well, but you know, in all of these, it's always, you know, you got to have one side or the other. You can't have any kind of understanding of issues on both sides. You've got to pick a side.
As you want with this. Yeah.
Right. And I think to the point of, you know, progressives being perhaps fickle voters, folks on the left, I think, you know, with the ongoing war in Gaza, aren't necessarily, you know, just happy to say, well, I'll vote for the Democrat because they're not Trump, or I'll vote for the Democrat because I'm on the left and I align with them. I think they're really making the point that, no, I have these very serious political, humanitarian differences with you, and I don't really care if you're a Democrat. That's not cutting it for me anymore.
And a lot of those differences come because they know people who were impacted by this, or they are impacted by this.
Right.
Like, Cook County has
this is real.
Has the largest population of Palestinian Americans
in the country.
Mm-hmm. Like, this really impacts people at home.
And journalists, of course, keeping their eye on things. Brandon, I'm going to stick with you because it is sad, unfortunate news. The Sun-Times, through buyouts, granted, losing 20% of its staff. What does that do to the journalistic landscape?
Oh, it's a major blow. I mean, we all, obviously, you know, different news organizations, we have fun, we compete. But at the end of the day, we root for each other.
United.
We don't want to see job loss. And to see this situation, I mean, especially to the sports staff, you're gutting sports coverage, women's sports coverage, photographers. It's just, I can't fathom how they're going to produce the same quality of news they did before. And ultimately, that impacts our viewers, our audience, Chicagoans themselves. And this is not just happening at Sun-Times or Chicago Public Media. It's across the board, and not just in Chicago. We're facing a real crisis when it comes to gutting of our journalistic institutions, and it's not great for democracy at all.
And we've got about 1 minute left here. I want to get to some news today because the U.S. Supreme Court, 30 seconds actually, wait. I'm getting this side on former Alderman Patrick Daley Thompson. He is out of prison, so not going to make a difference there. But they're unanimously ruling that misleading is not lying. So he could have a retrial there. Rick?
Well, it's one more question of, are we seeing the courts weakening these anti-corruption statutes to try to prosecute, especially in the Chicago area?
And we're still waiting to fill a vacancy at the top of that office, at least permanently. So there we go.
Stay tuned.
We are out of time. Our thanks to Brandon Pope, Nick Blumberg, Alice Ann, and Rick Pearson. And we'll be back to wrap things up with an important note about this program right after this.
Tonight's presentation of Chicago Tonight, Week in Review, is made possible in part by Ann and Rich Carr, BNSF Railway, Francine and Dr. Anthony Brown, and the Mullenhauer Progressive Philanthropic Fund, in honor of Ida Mullenhauer, supporting quality journalism. Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And before we end the program, a personal note. It has been my privilege to report stories, grill politicians, and take my curiosity all over the city as part of the Chicago Tonight News team. But this will be my last show working on WTTW. A new challenge is on the horizon. Going forward, the Week in Review program will be in the smart and steady hands of my friend, Nick Blumberg.
Amanda, I cannot think of any shoes I would rather try to fill, although I don't know if I can wear the heels. We are so excited for your next adventure, but we are going to miss you like crazy. And to that end, here are a few of our favorite Amanda memories.
Another busy day in Springfield.
Amanda first came to our attention as State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, and after many appearances with us in that capacity, officially joined the WTTW News team in 2017.
What has to happen before lawmakers go home?
It's what this whole week has been working toward. Vice President Kamala Harris accepting her party's nomination for a promotion to President of the United States.
Her main beats have remained politics, including local, state, and federal.
Been outspoken as a critic, and President Trump doesn't seem to take all too kindly to that. So what would your strategy be to bring resources to Illinois?
Well, look, I would hope to convince him to change his ways.
And Amanda is always tireless in getting the story, no matter what or who stands in her way.
Grab the swab, and then I have to put it in one nostril.
Amanda also distinguished herself with her reporting during the COVID pandemic, and not just by being one of the first to introduce the public to what a COVID test was like. Who could forget her stellar coverage of both the pandemic and the political activity and fallout from the living room of her Chicago home, night after night after night, mostly in front of that cornfield painting?
Brandis, like other communities, the coronavirus has been costly for Skokie.
She also got out and did important reporting in communities in and around the Chicago area, telling the stories of those affected by the pandemic and the social unrest of 2020. Amanda also has a feel for telling stories on the lighter side as well.
It isn't quite the Caribbean, but the waters here in Lake Michigan have been getting bluer.
Having a little fun and connecting with the audience.
What my colleagues and I will miss the most, I think, is Amanda's bright, positive, team-first approach to work and life. It's not going to be the same here without you. Those clips just scratched the surface. Amanda, you and I have done conventions. We've done documentaries, a million late election nights, countless hours working with you. All a pleasure. But as your next door office neighbor, I think the thing I will miss the most are your absurdly loud sneezes. Nobody does it like you. Amanda, bon voyage.
Yes, apologies. You're welcome maybe to the audience that you have not had the privilege or an ear busting of a sneeze like that. Thanks so much, Nick. And good luck to you. And thanks to everyone watching. And that includes you, Mom, for your trust and for watching. And now for the Week in Review, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Stay healthy, safe, and informed. Good night and goodbye.
We're kind of hungry, right?
What else can we talk? Oh, Madigan, sentencing. What do we think the judge is going to focus on, Rick?
He's going to serve time. I mean,
how much, though?
Not long, maybe. Maybe I would say no more than 5 years.
Does he have the goodwill that Alderman Burke built up that got him such a light sentence?
The kind of outpouring that we saw for former Alderman Burke, I think a lot of people were surprised by all those letters that came pouring into the jail.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to be a multilingual law firm that provides translators for a variety of languages.